You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
And views expressed on this program are the responsibility of those who make them. They do not necessarily represent the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or any of its affiliates.
Welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen, whoever you are, wherever you are. All around this gorgeous place we call Earth, thanks for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. And for those of you joining us for the very first time tonight, a special welcome to you. I'm delighted you're here, and I hope you're delighted as well. I think you will be, and I hope you get The Kevin Smith Show habit. It's a good habit to get into. Well, we had interesting times again last night, and I've been receiving emails from people who want to know, were we under attack again? And I have to tell you, quite honestly, I don't know. We do know the location of the problem. The problem being that the player would not work, and as you have experienced tonight, that's not a problem because I'm using a different player. And we'll continue to do so until this is fully tracked down and we know exactly what's going on. Now, I've received emails that talk about conspiracies. I've received emails that talk about hack attacks, denial of service attacks. I don't know. I have no idea. It could just be a malfunction. Anyway, that's solved for now, and everyone is able to listen tonight. So call all of your friends and let them know. Send emails to those with whom you converse via email and let them know that everything is hunky-dory. Always wondered what that meant, and somebody just said it just means okay. I don't know where it came from, but anyway, so it is. We have a new opinion poll up on the website. Be sure you go visit that and express yourself. Also, we have, while you're on the website, kevinsmithshow.com, while you are there, be sure that you subscribe to our free weekly newsletter if you have not done so. It's going out tonight, and if you subscribe before the show is over, you'll be included in the list, and you'll get your K-Files e-zine. So just click on the menu on our website where it says K-Files e-zine and subscribe. And stop by our guest book and leave us a note. Tell us you were there. We'd love to have you do that. Now, once a month, we ask you to vote. Well, we ask you more than once a month, but we ask you to vote once a month for our podcast. And it's very important. It is what you can do to help us remain strong and able to come your way with great guests and great shows. If you vote for the podcast, then that helps us to obtain the sponsors we need to be able to do what we do. Okay? It's really that simple. And so while you're over there at kevinsmithshow.com, be sure that you also click where it says Vote for Our Podcast. Just scroll down the page. Now, something you can click that's free is UpSnap. It's that little white button on the right side as you scroll down the page. If you have a cell phone, you can click that link, open up a free UpSnap account, you know, kind of like when you went to Yahoo or Hotmail or Google and opened up that free account. And then you'll be able to get our show on your telephone. How about that? So if you're away from your computer one night, you can still get the show, and it doesn't cost you. We'll be back right after these messages, and we'll be talking tonight with Joe Montaldo. Well, before that break, I told you all kinds of things to go click on my site and things that you can do, the opinion poll, the guest book, and the free UpSnap account where you can listen to us on your telephone, and also the request that you vote for our podcast, and I hope you do all of that. But really now, while you're over there, probably one of the most important things you can do at kevinsmithshow.com is make sure you are subscribed to our free weekly newsletter, all right? That kind of keeps us up to date on what's coming, all right? And sometimes explanations about what just happened, because sometimes weird things happen, especially with shows that are all about the strange and unexplained. And tonight, we are going to be talking about more strange and unexplained with Joe Montaldo. He's been with us before. He is the national director of ICAR. And he is also a broadcaster. And so he's got some pretty interesting stories and pretty interesting insights on things. Joe, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Oh, Kevin, thanks for having me, Mac. Man, I loved it last time I was here. I was enjoying myself immensely. I wanted to tell you about, you know, I know y'all have heard this before. We've talked about this one or two, three times. Actually, nope, this will be the third time I've said this publicly, second time I've said this publicly, actually. And I mean on the radio about these reptilians in New Orleans. Guys, now, it was interesting. About a week ago, I did Coast to Coast, and when I did... there's been a couple other reports. Now, we haven't been able to verify these yet because we've got a lot of emails, but I'm going to just kind of touch on some of the things they've been talking about.
Well, let's back up first and sort of bring people up to speed on this. You live in the New Orleans area, and you had to evacuate because of Katrina. And then when you returned, you began getting some reports about people having seen reptilians, right?
Yes.
Okay. Who reported that to you?
Actually, the first report came from some National Guardsmen. The second report came from some NOPDs.
So that would be the police department in New Orleans.
New Orleans Police Department, yeah, sorry. I'm mm-hmm. just thinking everybody's a local tonight.
Well, no, we're in 70 countries tonight.
Well, yes, New Orleans Police Department. And there was three officers from there that had reported this. The interesting thing about this was not that long after Katrina. We came home, it was about 5 days, 4 or 5 days after Katrina we came home, basically snuck into the city, because they weren't really letting anybody in there. We were local contractors, so they were happy to see us, but in general they weren't letting anybody in. Well, we get in, you know, we're setting back up, setting up generators and all, and just, you know, my phone system somehow or another made it through Katrina. I'm with Bell South, and it made it through Katrina working. And it couldn't have been 4 or 5 days, maybe 10 days. I'd have to actually go look on the calendar, but we get a phone call about some National Guardsmen that were walking down Esplanade Avenue, and this is the old city. I'm not sure how many of y'all are familiar with New Orleans, but New Orleans has a new city and an old city. We have the Vieux Carré, which is the French Quarter. That is old New Orleans, the 400 or 500-year-old city that's here, that's that. And then it's surrounded by a larger city. Well, Esplanade runs down the backside of the French Quarter. Now, there was still, at this time, I don't know, 3-4 foot of water in the streets there. It hadn't all been pumped out yet. And it was kind of sloped. The water actually came up from the backside of the canals running up towards the French Quarter, because the French Quarter didn't take that much water. But
now,
anyway,
is Esplanade, is this the street that runs right beside the Jack's Brewery?
No, no, that's Desire runs alongside the Jack
okay.
Brewery. And the thing of it is this, well, Desire, the street that runs alongside the Jack's Brewery, if you're headed down towards the old Mint, it runs right into Esplanade. Esplanade dead ends into the river. So if you're going down the street, you will hit it. Go, if you take a left right there, and you go down about a half mile, not even that far, about three-quarters of a, maybe a quarter of a mile, somewhere, what we like to call the old French Quarter, somewhere in about the middle of the quarter right there, these National Guardsmen walked up on what appeared to be reptilians. Now, these were classic descriptions of what we consider to be reptilians in research today. So I was very interested when the call came in. Now, the funny part about this is, Kevin, is in the reports from the National Guard, they were guns drawn, which means they had M16 in hand, cocked, and ready to fire. Now, they walked up to this thing, and there's been some hints, some people said something about talking. I've not heard anything about that yet, so we're checking into that. But they said they walked up to these things, guns drawn, and then the next thing these guys remember is they were slinging their M16s, which means they were shouldering their M16s, and they were headed back towards the river, walking. And the one guy said that he glanced back over his shoulder and looked, and they were still standing there. He just found it odd that they just kept walking the other way. And the thing about the NOPD report, it was basically the same report in the same area. It was a few days later, but it was the same report. Now, as far as I know, these guys may have talked to each other. The guys from the NOPD swear they don't know the guys from the National Guard. The guys from the National Guard swear they don't know the guys from the NOPD. But they both said that they were there. Now, what I find interesting in is I couldn't get an accurate number count, Kevin. In other words, when I asked the National Guardsmen how many reptilians were there, one guy said one guy said three, one guy said five. Now, I don't know why they saw a different amount. That, to me, didn't make any sense at all, other than the fact that at the time they seen him, I don't really think they were physically where they thought they were. They may have been for a moment, but I think once they walked up on them, I don't think they were. If they were physically there, then mentally they were somewhere else, because it seemed like, you know, it was. Yeah, as a matter of fact, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, the four guys I'm talking about had been brought back from Iraq to come work in the city. Okay, so these guys had actually seen duty. I mean, they had seen live fire, and so it's not like they, you know, didn't know what they were doing. When they walked up on these guys, they had the M16s in their hands. Now, at this moment, I mean, any nervous guy who squeezed a trigger should have at least shot one. I just found it interesting. They seen them. They approached them like, you know, they were going to check out what they were. And then the next thing they can remember, they're walking down the thing, walking back down Esplanade. Now, it doesn't seem to be any affected time period missing here, at least that they can tell, because no one was aware of the time. When I asked them what time it was, they said roughly, you know, in the afternoon time, but they couldn't tell you exactly what time it was, and they couldn't tell you if any time had lapsed from the time that they saw them to the time they were walking away. But there was one kicker to this. When the guy was describing, there's an old church on Esplanade. When he was describing walking down Esplanade and seeing the church, he was talking about the sun glinting off of the stained glass on this old church. Now, when he was walking back, he still was talked about seeing this church because it's kind of a weird-looking church. That's why people talk about it. And when he was walking by, he actually said it just seemed to be hazy or dark. Or shadowy, that's how he said it, actually was shadowy. And the thing about that is that means that when they approached them, it was early afternoon, and when they were leaving, it was late afternoon. But there's no way to prove that, Kevin. And I mean, it's sheer speculation. I mean, you can go by what we were told, but there's just no way to prove it.
Well, actual fact, Joe, there's no way to prove that one even, that you cannot prove you exist if people don't want to accept the testimony.
That's true. That's true. That's very true. And, you know, I wouldn't have paid that much attention to it if it wouldn't have been so closely after Katrina. I would have probably said it was a hoax. But first off, we're in the middle of a major disaster. Someone takes the time to look up my phone number. Now, let's remember, people, there wasn't much in the way of phone systems down here. There was no internet at all unless you had dial-up or a card like I had. There just wasn't anything. So someone went through a lot of trouble to go find my phone number on two occasions to call us. And it's not that easy a thing to do unless you're looking on the specific things, alien research. If you type in alien research, you'll be able to find my phone number. But that's it. Unless, you know, they had maybe seen
Old Times Picayune. Let's back up just a minute now. You said that their description of these creatures or beings is very much like what we hear when we talk about reptilians. Okay, now, how did they describe them?
On average, 6 to 7 foot tall, roughly about 300 pounds. One's described with green. Well, I got to be careful. We get induction criteria. They're kind of are y'all familiar with a hunter green? If you took a hunter green and maybe lighten it 2 or 3 shades, that's the color they're talking about. I'd actually show you on a palette. But anyway, they talk about this kind of green color that kind of evaporates the body. But they also talk about the yellow stomachs. They have brown splotches on the stomachs, brown. And it's like their bellies, the underneath their arms, and the back of their legs all have like, sometimes they're different colors, but most of the time they're a yellowish color. And they're usually spotted with either brown or black spots. And that does vary, too, amongst male and females in ages. But the thing about it is, it's a classic description.
Now, they were standing upright.
Mm-hmm.
And did they hear them making any noises at all?
Actually, the only guy that said anything, he said he thought he heard a dolphin, which fits the reptilians to a T, but he said he actually thought he heard a dolphin. That's actually what got my attention in the first report. That he said that he thought he heard a dolphin, and which means he heard clicks and beeps is what he heard. And a clicking is kind of common with the grays and the reptilians. For the grays, it's not for speech, by the way, but with reptilians, they do have this really fast, really quick, really squeaky thing that they do. It's not like a language like we would understand the language. But to them, it's a language. It must be a very advanced language, too, because they can communicate a lot of data over it. But even they prefer to communicate telepathically. But I think if you startle one, just like if you startle with a human, you know, when he said, oh, what was that? You know, it might have been the same thing for the reptilian. For a moment, he might have actually verbally said something because they've seen M16s pointed at him. But otherwise than that, you just don't usually hear him do that. But he did describe that. They did describe him pretty good in depth. The only instrumentation anybody said was what I guess I would call like a tricorder or a podcaster. I don't know. It's about the same size is what I'm saying. You know, handheld, maybe 4 inches across, 6 inches long.
One of the reptilians had that?
Yeah, but no one really knew what it was. And they
he was probably on his iPod listening to my show.
I like that one. Good, Kevin. You might have been. But it was a very strange thing. And, you know, I asked all these guys if any of them would be willing to, you know, go publicly or let me use their names. And, you know, NPD's like, look, come on, guy. We got to work in this town. And National Guard says, look, I still got time. I'm like, well, I said, here's my card. You got my phone number. If you want to talk about this again, give me a call. You know, I'd be more than willing to put you on air. I'm sure I could get half a dozen radio shows would put you on the air out there just to hear you talk about this, you know, from their own point of view, because they sounded shaken when they called. And this was, I think, the one guy said it was 2 days after the event, the first call, so, and they still sounded shaken when they were talking about it.
So there was no indication whatsoever that these guys were just pulling your leg, that this was a joke.
As far as we can tell, that just nobody, and nobody's come forward since and said we psyched you, this was a hoax or anything else. And since then, Linda Moulton Howe got a report from a gentleman. Matter of fact, he wrote to me just recently about him. He saw a reptilian in New Orleans, but he had seen one in New Orleans before Katrina, which was the first time I'd ever heard of that, by the way. But let's be honest, we have Mardi Gras, which is 2 weeks long, and anybody could walk around here, gray, reptilian, human, alien, it wouldn't matter, I mean, because you can walk around costumed. And most people would just look at the reptilian and say, damn, that's a good costume. that would really about be, because, you know, these people down here, they're coming to have a good time, they're not really paying attention, you know, unless it's something we're not going to talk about on the air, but they're not paying attention. So the thing about it is, it's an easy place to come blend in. Even the French Quarter, even when it's not Mardi Gras, the French Quarter is a busy place. A lot of times people are costumed down there walking around. It's not a big deal to see something out of the ordinary in the French Quarter. And most people, if you ask any famous star, even like Angelique who just moved down here, they will tell you they can walk around the French Quarter and not be approached. it's just that kind of place. People just, it doesn't matter if you're famous, it doesn't matter if you're scary or ugly, it doesn't matter if you're reptilian, apparently. They really just don't pay attention.
Okay, now when these National Guardsmen walked up on them, they saw them just standing there. Now, I have a question about this, but something just occurred to me. Did these things have a long tail?
Actually, when it comes to the reptilians, there's only certain ones that have tails. In this description, I didn't hear anybody describe a tail, but the one big one he described to me should have had one. Usually, the ones that get up in the 7, 7.5 foot range have a tail for some reason. Some of the other ones don't. And the females don't. So I'm not sure what that is. Maybe young males don't grow a tail. I don't know. I don't want to speculate because I just don't know. But we do know for some reason some have tails and some don't. And when they do have tails, they're like big old alligator tails. Big, long, heavy. I guess they use them for balance. And I guess if you're going to get 7 foot tall, it might be nice to have an extra third leg.
That might be that one with the tail might be the bodyguard, because that's what an alligator will get you with.
Yeah, and he might be. I mean, because you know, usually when someone usually describes a tail, this is how they describe them: 7 footer taller, with a high ridged head. Now they do describe ribs on the females and the other reptilians, but they're not real tall ridges. On these particular ones, for some reason, there's three ridges that run down the center. The two on the outside ridges are probably about 3 inches tall, with the center ridges being around 6 inches tall. And they run pretty much all the way down the back of the neck, and about halfway down their back in the middle of the spine, they start tapering down to about the tailbone, and then they fade out.
What about these that the National Guard saw? Did they have those ridges?
Well, that's what I was saying. The big male had ridges. Now, he didn't say anything about any of the other ones, but we call him the big male because that's how we know him. But the big one had ridges. So that's why I said if it didn't have a tail, that was just odd. And I'm thinking he just didn't see the tail is what I'm thinking. If it was standing straight on, you might not have noticed it, you know, because they're kind of broad. On average, they're a bit big, heavier than humans, probably. If a male's got a 46, 50-inch chest, they're probably around 60 or 70 inches. So, you know, they're kind of covering a lot of territory when they're in front of you. So you probably wouldn't see the tail unless they were standing sideways, or if their legs were on some kind of position where you could see down between them and actually see the tail. But for some reason, he didn't describe that. And, I even asked him if they would be willing to maybe go to counseling or maybe regression or something to see if we could find why they don't remember slinging their guns. What's interesting about the NOPD, the one NOPD said he had his pistol out and in its face, and then next thing he knew, he was sitting back in his car.
Interesting. Now, I want to get into the NOPD and their account in a little more detail here in just a second. But, pardon me, in either account, whether we're talking about the National Guard or the New Orleans Police Department, did they sense that there was any type of intelligence with these creatures?
Well, like with the National Guard, I mean, this guy, for the young guy, he was kind of like, maybe he was just fascinated with him, but he could tell, he had a sense that they were much more intelligent beings than we were. Now, no one really, you know, I don't understand exactly why he said that, but it seemed to be that the way he described it is they went guns drawn, okay? They were actually coming up as a threat to these things. And the reptilians didn't respond in a harmful manner or in a threatened manner. They just, and then all of a sudden they were walking away. So as far as he's concerned, he thinks they're a higher species than we are for the simple fact that they didn't retaliate against them for having M16s aimed at them.
Well, you know what that sounds like? And I'm not saying this tongue-in-cheek, but it sounds very much like what Jabba the Hutt referred to as Jedi tricks.
Yeah, well, that's true. And it probably, you know, we have talked about this. We figured one of two things went on here. Either they were physically picked up, which is possible, or as they approached them, the reptilians simply just imaged them telepathically, and they just turned around and walked away. And we know that the reptilians are telepathic and quite telepathic, and we know the humans and the greys are as well. So it may have been just what they did. As they walked up, they probably just put a thought in their head just to forget for a moment, pointing them on their little happy way, and, you know, the one guy looked back, but like he said, he didn't even think about going back. He just kept walking. Didn't even say anything to his brother and just kept on walking.
the thing that's interesting about this is if you think of the context, after Katrina, I mean, you know, New Orleans is still trying to recover from Katrina.
Oh, yes.
And but here we are just a few days after Katrina. And in that context, the people who are doing police work, firefighters, medical teams, the National Guard, these people are doing a very focused, dangerous, and dirty job. And they're not in a frame of mind to play tricks or jokes on someone. And so that's what makes, to me, that's what makes this very interesting. As a former police officer, I've never worked anything like Katrina, but I've worked some disasters. And in those disasters, it's not a joke, and you're not in a frame of mind to play jokes. We have to take a break, and when we come back from this break, ladies and gentlemen, we'll continue talking with Joe Montaldo. We'll continue talking about the reptilians for a moment, and then we have a couple of other things we want to get into. Quite naturally, later in the show, we'll open the telephone lines for you to call in, and you can also ask Joe questions, make comments, or if you saw reptilians down there in New Orleans or somewhere else, you can tell us.
Sure you know what you're doing.
And we're back. My guest this evening is Joe Montaldo. He is the National Director of ICAR, an organization that investigates all manner of strange things, things that generally are classified as paranormal. And he is also the owner of the UFO Paranormal Radio Network, one of our networks on which we broadcast. And he is also a broadcaster himself. But in his capacity as the National Director of ICAR, I suppose it was in that capacity, he was contacted in the New Orleans area by some National Guardsmen just a few days after the Katrina disaster. And he was told about some reptilians that they encountered. A few days after that, he was contacted by some New Orleans police officers who told him of their encounter with reptilians. Now, how many National Guardsmen, Joe, were involved?
Well, there's actually four National Guardsmen involved in this, and three NOPDs. Now, and in the NOPD thing, there was like two and one. I mean, it was the same report, and it even kind of confused me a little bit because there was three officers present. But I'm not sure where the third officer came from, because there was two in a squad car, which is common in the city of New Orleans. The other guy just told me that he was there.
Okay, well, let me suggest something. That sounds like a supervisor.
It probably was. It was just weird because he didn't say anything about his car, his bike, or anything, and it might have just been something he forgot to mention or something, because the other two, well, the other guy really didn't say much of anything. He just seemed to be kind of just petrified from the whole ordeal. But the one guy, he was like, well, I had my gun drawn, I had it in their face, and the next thing I knew, we were sitting back in the car. And that was pretty much that.
How did he describe them?
He described them almost identical to the same way the National Guard did.
So you think it would be the same group of reptilians that
they
saw?
I think for whatever reason these things were down in this particular area, which I'm not even sure why they were there, they ran into the same group. I guess they realized after they dealt with the National Guard, you know, dealing with people there wasn't that big of a deal. And to be honest with you, Kevin, on most days they probably wouldn't have even seen a National Guard for at least the first 3 or 4 weeks. You could have walked around the backside of the French Quarter because it was chest deep in the water. You could have heard a boat coming from miles away. So, you know, they probably moved around the city quite freely for several weeks before they actually had that, well, for at least 2 weeks before they had this first encounter. And then, you know, a few days later, the second encounter. And then there was no more reported after that. But I also noticed not too long after that, within about a week of that other report, about maybe 2 weeks of that other report, you know, all the water was out of the city. They had opened up the broke, where they had dammed up to keep the water out of Jefferson Parish. They had opened that up so we, all the contractors, could get in there and start looking around, and people could start getting there and assessing their homes. And then, you know, so I think at that point, maybe they just, I said, there's too many people here. But I'm really thinking now, because of the way the National Guard reported them, that they were probably making themselves at home down here for at least a week or two after the storm. Now, there's no way to prove that, but it's just the way they seen them. They seen them in the same two places. They didn't really seem to be doing anything, just kind of milling around like tourists. One of the guys said, he said it kind of reminded of, you know, four or five tourists standing around chatting on Elysian Fields underneath the big oaks. Except there was water there at this time.
How deep was the water on Esplanade that point?
Well, what's funny about Esplanade is on the right side of Esplanade, it was probably about 2.5 feet. On the left side of Esplanade, it was only probably about 8 inches. And then they were actually on the medium, which is a little bit higher. So I would say it was probably, you know, maybe somewhere between ankle and knee deep, somewhere around there that they were still walking in. That was 2 weeks after the storm. I kept seeing on the TV, they kept saying, oh, the water's out of the city, and you could drive over the causeway, not the 24-mile bridge, but one of the ones on Causeway Boulevard, and look into the city and see the water on Airline Highway running all the way into the city, you know, 3-4 feet deep still. So we were all kind of cracking up about that down here.
Well, that's more news media accuracy, Joe.
Yeah. That's about the... Well, you know, that was another thing that was hard, Kevin. You know, the whole time I was here, I'm listening to national news going, does any of these people paying attention to what's going on down here? I mean, I'd hear one thing on TV, and I'm thinking, guys, in what city did you go to?
You know, the same thing used to happen to me when I was overseas, and I would be in one of these hot zones, living and working there every day, and then on satellite TV, I would see news from America at night, and these reporters, these correspondents, would be giving a report allegedly from where I was living, and you couldn't even recognize what they said compared to what you saw all day. You know, it was just unbelievable.
Yeah, it's kind of a sad thing. It's probably one of the reasons we can't get any of this stuff on CNN or Larry King. Because it's kind of a shame. I mean, this is something, these are seven good witnesses.
But, you know, the sad thing is if these guys go public and they themselves come out with this story on a radio show or something, their career's over.
Oh, yeah, it's over with. They'll drum them right off the police force in a heartbeat, and you know what the military's going to do with them. They're just going to push them out. You know, they won't give them a dishonorable discharge or anything, but they'll push them out. They'll make it where they have to leave. And that's exactly what they'll do. And I can understand these guys not wanting to go public. I'm sure eventually one or two of them will, because from what I could see, at least three of them, it was bothering really bad. It was just one of those things you see, and there's no way to explain it away. You can't relate it to God. You can't relate it to Satan. You can't relate it to pretty much anything that you know from the realm that you've existed in. This is a whole entirely new thing, and it's staring you right in the face. And, you know, you could say, well, maybe it was a demon. Well, if it was a demon, would have ate you for lunch right then and there. And as far as I know, angels don't come in reptilian form. So.
Well, I've never met one face-to-face, so I don't know, but I would suspect you're correct. Now, let me ask you this. Do you have any idea or any theories about where these things came from?
Well, it's getting complicated here. When you get into the amphibians, because I know we're calling them reptilians, ladies and gentlemen, but let me clarify a couple things right quick. People call them reptilians because of the way they look. If you listen to the description I gave, they kind of look like a human-type lizard. Because they really look a lot like humans, by the way, but they just have reptilian characteristics. The thing about it is they also have gills in their neck. They're actually amphibious, and they're warm-blooded. They're not cold-blooded, so they're not reptiles. They may have been reptiles at one time, but now they're not. They're warm-blooded animals that actually are amphibians. And if you look at their hands and feet, which I shouldn't even tell you all this, they're webbed, which tells you something right there, kind of like a lab has webbed paws or a duck has webbed. Just tells you they spend a lot of time in the water.
So maybe they were washed up by Katrina.
Well, I don't know, but we do think we have some stuff that suggests that maybe this particular species is not actually extraterrestrial. that this species probably evolved on this planet some 700-800 million years ago. Maybe they left for a while, but now they're back. Because, you know, I remember reading reports about reptilians, you know, abductions all over the place, and you can find them in our culture back to the beginning of the written language. The Sumerians talk about them, the Dogons talk about them, the Bible talks about them. So we can't really get away from them, and they do seem to be an integral part of our history. So, I mean, maybe we should find out what these guys really are, and if they are really from here, maybe we can work something out. Apparently, they're more advanced than us, but, I mean, if they're from Earth and we're from Earth, that's kind of some kind of kindred relationship there, right? I mean, it's got to be some kind of relationship. So I guess the same one we have with the animals on the planet. But what I find interesting about this is, I don't know how many of y'all are familiar. I call it the Pravadamat, which is not actually a good thing to call it, but it's called the Map of the Creator. It was found by an archaeologist about a decade and a half ago. What's interesting about this map is when they carbon dated this map, okay, now remember, this is an aerial map. It's a resource map taken by an aerial view 120 million years ago. As far as I know, guys, there were no humans on the planet 120 million years ago, and not any that could have had an aerial view of anything. Now, this thing's been authenticated on at least a dozen times by different archaeologists. Do you see it in mainstream news? No, you don't, because it's shaking the foundations of our belief system. This is telling us that there was either humans were either here a lot longer than we thought they were, or there's another intelligent species on this planet, or was another intelligent species on this planet.
I've never heard it talked about on mainstream media. We did a show on it here, but nothing on CNN, ABC, NBC, CBS, MSNBC, or who else is in the alphabet soup? Oh, yeah. Fox, F-O-X. Yeah, none of them.
But that's the thing. I mean, if this would have been some bumpkin, didn't have a degree or something, didn't understand what he, I would have said, okay, but first off, the guy who found it, well, the three archaeologists actually had found it, their credentials are impeccable. And since then, I know at least a dozen other archaeologists have looked at this thing, and they're astounded by it. So I don't understand why there's not some kind of peer-reviewed journal on it, or it's like it's being blackballed.
It probably is. But let's go back to the reptilians now. You're saying that they may have been here for many thousands, perhaps millions of years. Now, you said they're warm-blooded. How do we know that?
Well, first off, they've been seen in cold climates, and they seem to move quite quickly. So that doesn't sound like a reptile also. But the main way we know is when most people grab them, they're warm to the touch, actually a little bit warmer than humans. Most people would say, like if you were rubbing your dog on your belly, you know how dogs got an average temperature of 101 degrees? They say it kind of feels the same way, about the same temperature. So that's telling you that they're warm-blooded, and they're a little bit warmer-blooded than we are. But otherwise than that, there's no real way of knowing it. But now, I did find one thing interesting. There was somebody we had talked to on a couple occasions, actually a couple of people on a couple of occasions, had said that when a reptilian gets hurt, it bruises like a human does. There's like the same type of bruise. And two of them went as far as saying is they've actually seen, like when they get a scratch or a cut, that they bleed red, which I found interesting, which means they're way more like us than we probably want to even admit to ourselves.
Now, is their skin, is it scaly, or is it more like armor, like an alligator?
You know, it's kind of like a cross between Kevlar and crushed velvet. That's the only way I can describe it. People say when they touch it, it is soft, soft to the touch, but it has a feel like if you grabbed it, like you couldn't penetrate it with a knife. So that's where we come up with the Kevlar and the crushed velvet, because people say it is real soft, like you're not crushed velvet, suede. I'm sorry, like you're running your hand across suede. They say it feels almost the same way. But if you grab hold to them, it feels hard and firm, almost like an exoskeleton. So you know, it's kind of interesting, and it's not. And people describe what they like to call scales, but when we've got some really in-depth descriptions, their torso and their arms, and even their thighs, have what look to be raised bumps. They kind of look like a scale, but they're not. They're just a raised, like a round raised bump on their skin, and there just seems to be hundreds of them. But I'm not even sure what that is. But we've had enough people now tell us this. I mean, on reptilian cases, we're probably up around 1,500, 1,800 cases. And the thing about it is when you get that many cases, you start seeing a lot of similarities. And that's one.
Now, where do these cases come from? Geographically, where are these people?
Oh, all over the world. It doesn't matter. Like being on your show tonight, I guarantee you we'll get 30, 40 people write us about it. And the more we get out, this is what I find very interesting, Kevin. The more public speaking I do, the more contactees. This year alone, we will probably do this year for ICAR. You know, we boast 7,000 investigated cases. I bet you $50 we'll investigate at least 5,000 to 7,000 cases this year alone. If I keep public speaking like it, I'll be speaking in Roswell in a couple of weeks. If I keep doing this, it's going to overload us is what it's going to do. And but these people, they're looking for a venue to tell somebody about this, and nobody seems to listen. Linda took a call today. I was getting ready to go to work. This was 8 o'clock this morning. I'm getting ready to go to work. This gentleman calls us to tell us about his contact. And he was just amazed that someone answered the phone and said hi. His words, ladies and gentlemen, by the way. He said, I was amazed that someone answered the phone and said hi. He was just astonished. But, you know, and we refer them. Like right now when, you know, we got all this email just recently, what I did is contacted some ICAR members, opened up the database, and said, guys, let's start reading. And to be honest with you, Kevin, I'll probably call you in a couple of weeks just to tell you what we got through reading. Because there's a ton of abduction cases in there, probably more than 100, 150 abduction cases and at least that many sighting cases. That seemed to be pretty good. So, you know, for us, that's what it is. It's getting the word out there to people so that people can contact us back with their experiences. And by doing so, ladies and gentlemen, you're allowing us to put a comparisons database together. What we're doing now is establishing abduction criteria. And what we're doing is like if we ask, when we're talking to you about a reptilian, one of the first questions I'm going to ask you is I'm going to say, well, what does his eyes look like? And I'm going to be looking for a particular response because I'm going to be honest with you. After hearing 1,500 people tell me their eyes look a certain way, I'm going to expect you to answer that way. And this is what we've been doing. And, like, let me ask you this. Do you think reptilians have fingernails or claws or do they even have a protective nail on the end of their fingers? And how many fingers do they have?
All right, we have to take a break. And when we come back from that break, we'll continue talking with Joe Montaldo. And we'll continue talking about strange and unexplained things. A little bit more about reptilians, as a matter of fact. And then something else that he's been hitting a home run on. We're back, and my guest this evening is Joe Montaldo. He is the National Director of ICAR. And, Joe, if you will, just very quickly, tell us what ICAR is all about.
Well, it's the International Community for Alien Research, and we truly mean International Community for Alien Research. I'm one of the co-founders. A lot of times people say I'm the founder. Let me correct that. I am the co-founder along with several other people who helped me found this organization about 9 years ago. We specialize in abduction research. This is what we do. And as far as I know, we are the only real organization that does this in the way that we do it. We actually, to be honest with you, that's pretty much all we mess with anymore. We do take sighting cases, but exceptional sighting cases. But the organization is set up to help people that know their contactees to come to what we like to call the awakening stages and to help find out if people really are or really not. Because I'm going to be honest, guys, 2 out of 10, maybe 3 out of 10 people who call us are really contactees. Now, maybe this year it'll be a little higher rate because we're speaking a lot more, but still, it's a lot of work. But what we do with these people is we take them. We find that if they're being abducted by the reptilians, the greys, or the humans, and there's one or two other species out there that we talk about, but in general, we're taking comparisons data. What types of the ships they're in, what the interior of the ships look like, what do the aliens look like, what types of procedures are being done to them, things along these. And we're very particular. I want to know if they got fingernails, eyelashes, eyebrows, ears, nose holes. What type of nose? Do they have ridges? Do they not have ridges? How many toes? How many fingers? Are they wearing clothes? Are they not wearing clothes? Do they speak English? Things like this. And these are the things we're looking for. And by doing this, we're getting a very large amount of data that is going together, certain types of procedures we know. We know that abductees go through certain phases with age. contactees at a very young age, all the way up to puberty, are fairly pleasant experiences, or actually mostly pleasant experiences. Puberty to age about age 28, 29, they're pretty horrific experiences. After that, the experiences tend to change a lot, and you know, some people tend to work with the aliens more, and we call them keepers. Some people kind of still hold to themselves, but they're not having really bad experiences, and they're coming to terms with it. So, I mean, that's what we do. We're trying to find these people who are having these contacts and basically help them in any way we can. We have a large group of people who work with us as counselors. We've got an open online auditorium where you can come in and talk about this anytime that you want. And you can come in. There's usually going to be several investigators in there, or state directors or regional directors or what have you. I'm in there myself from time to time talking, and I talk with contactees in there all the time. You can find us. It's actually called the ICAR UFO Alien Phenomena Group, and it's on Pal Talk. We're real easy to find. The room's there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and we do use it as an online support group. That's another thing, by the way, Kevin, since we decided to add that factor, because when we found that ICAR, I said, you know, we need to find a way to use the internet to help find abductees. Well, I got to say, this works. And then after we started finding them, they all said, well, you know, we don't get to talk to each other. There's nobody locally I can talk to. And then they founded this support group along with this research group, and they kind of meshed it all into one. And on any given day, there'll be anywhere from 20 to 40 or 50 people in there, most of them contactees, hanging around, chit-chatting, and discussing things that go on in their lives and how they deal with this and how their children deal with this. People don't understand, if your mama comes up and says she's a contactee, odds are that you're a contactee, your kid's a contactee, your great-grandmama's a contactee, or an abductee, however you want to phrase it. But, you know, we know this, and now we work with generational cases. A lot of the families we're working with, and I say families because that's what we're working with, we're working with families who are having the same experience from mother to son to grandson to great-grandson. So it's a very interesting phenomenon itself. And I tell this to people all the time, you do not have to believe that there are aliens visiting this planet. All you have to understand is if the percentages are right, we're talking 10 to 25% of this planet is having some type of contact that no one scientifically can explain away, and no one religiously can explain away. So for me, this means that we should be having a very serious investigation by some very serious, very credible scientists. Even if this was some kind of crazy disease that was affecting 25% of the people, we should still be checking into it, even if it was only affecting 5%. But still, when you have people in Australia, people in Russia, people in China, people in South America, people in America, people in Canada, all having the same experiences at different times in their life, at different times of the day, this is telling you something's going on.
And no doubt in your mind.
No, there's just none. I mean, when I talk to someone, I'll give you an example. The other day I'm talking to someone from New Zealand. They're telling me about it. First time I ever talked to them, by the way. They're telling me about this particular experience with a gray that happened to them. Went into quite a big detail. Just a week before that, I was talking to a lady in California who has the exact identical experience. Now, I haven't talked about it on the radio. It hasn't been published in any books. It hasn't been made public anywhere. It's an impossibility that these two women experienced the exact same things in two different time periods in their lives. And now, you know, when you start talking to them, the ongoing experiences are the same. And it's a very interesting thing. There's minor differences, but all in all, the experiments and what's going on and what they're being told is basically the same. This is a physical impossibility, ladies and gentlemen. This cannot happen on our planet. And if it was two people, you could say it was a fluke. Three, four, yeah, maybe 10, a coincidence. Well, this is ICAR. You know, this is 7,000 cases. Now, when you take this percentage out of the United States and you break this out worldwide, you're talking 500, 600, 700 million people. Somebody needs to be out there checking this out. Even if it's for the 7,000, somebody should be checking it out and seeing what's going on with these 7,000 people. And these are only ICAR cases. This isn't any of the other organizations or any of the other so-called people who work in the field. So, I mean, this is something that somebody should be taking seriously for whatever reason they want to. It should still be taken seriously. For us, we've done our homework. We've done the research. We understand that, you know, when you're describing an alien down to what color eyes they have and what type pupils you do, and you've heard this 1,800 times, there's no doubt in your mind that this is a real phenomenon. These people are seeing the same thing. They're experiencing the same thing. you know,
well,
one,
let me ask you something about these reptilians that were reported in New Orleans. Did they tell you anything about their eyes?
Actually, they did describe their eyes. I will tell you the color that they described, the two colors that they described were quite accurate, which is a yellow and brown. I'm not going to tell you what form. I'm not going to tell you what kind of pupils they are, guys, because that's abduction criteria. But the thing about it is that they did describe them accurately. When they said that the type of pupil it was, I knew right then there they had seen what they seen. And that's the thing. And, you know, we do release a lot of this, and y'all can hear, I'll talk about a lot of this stuff. Some of it I will keep for the organization for the simple fact that it helps us determine who's lying and who's telling the truth. And one day we hope there's a time when we can just release it all. But if we released everything we know right now, come tomorrow, I wouldn't know who to believe and who not to believe, because everybody and their mom would come up and tell me they were contactee because they'd know everything to say and how to say it. So, you know, we're kind of guarded about that. And I just don't understand, Kevin. You know, we've been doing this 9 years. There's organizations mm-hmm. that are much older than us. And I don't understand why this hasn't been done 10, 20, 30 years ago. Like with Betty and Barney Hill, I don't understand why from that point forward we haven't started tracking this as a group of people and really starting to understand this. Because if it's one or two crazies, that's fun. But, I mean, you've been doing radio for a long time. How many people have you talked to that said they've seen or experienced aliens?
Lot of people.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, this is something, you know, for Americans, this is 25% of the population. For the Chinese, from what best we can tell, 10 or 15%. From the Russians, it looks like more like 30%. I guess that's because the KGB released all them files 10 years ago. But the thing about it is, it's not isolated to the United States by any means. And it seems to affect everybody, you know, people in every country on the planet, and it seems to affect them the same way. And what bothers me is if somebody has the ability to come into the United States, physically remove someone from the country, do experiments on them, put them back, and then go to Russia and do the same thing, well, let's be honest, ladies and gentlemen, we're no threat to them at all, are we? Just none at all. I mean, we're like children to them, I guess, or something even lesser than children. I really don't want to, you know, but the thing about it is these, they seem to move freely amongst our planet. They don't seem to have any fear of our technologies whatsoever, or us for that matter. I do take that as a sign of arrogance, by the way, but still.
I don't know if it would be arrogance. Maybe it is, but, we assume ourselves to be superior, far superior to an amoeba.
Yeah, well, it's true. It could just be that that's just how they feel about it, and they feel like they're here for whatever reasons, but it just seems like when you start talking to contactees, one of the first things they want to talk about is, and for some reason a lot of contactees get stuck on this, is these different types of experiments that happen to them in their 20s and what they like to call their other children. This is what blows my mind, too. I'm talking to these two ladies from New Mexico. I was in New Mexico talking to these two ladies that were from Nevada. And they were telling me about, these are two different accounts, they just happened to catch me at the same time. And they were telling me about these two reptilian encounters they had. What was interesting about it is they were talking about two reptilian hybrid children of theirs. And they gave almost perfect descriptions of these two children, which was funny because the one lady said, you know, she described the child as, and she said it kind of had this almost stringy-like blonde hair coming out of its head. Well, she was a blonde. Apparently she was a natural blonde because the kid had blonde hair. The other one, who was a brunette, actually described the kid's hair as brunette. But they described the eyes the same and the ridges the same. So it was just really weird. And they also say that the fingers look more human when they're hybrids. I have no idea what that's about. None whatsoever. I don't even know why they would want to have a hybrid. I can understand why the grays do it, but I don't understand why the reptilians do it. Or maybe it's just some kind of experiment they're running. But
maybe just keeping up with the Joneses over on the next galaxy could be. We have to take our top of the hour break, and we'll be back in just a few minutes, continuing with Joe Montaldo. When we come back, we'll open the phone lines for you. We are back, and let me welcome all of you who are joining us just now in this second hour. My guest this evening is Joe Montaldo, and he is the National Director of ICAR, I-C-A-R, an organization that investigates and researches and works in the field of alien abduction and with contactees and abductees and so forth. He is also the owner of the UFO Paranormal Radio Network, and he is a broadcaster himself. And he's been sharing with us about some pretty strange reports that have come out of New Orleans of National Guardsmen and New Orleans police officers who observed what we generally refer to as reptilians, up close and personal, by the way. And he's got some more interesting things to share with us that I'm going to ask him about here in just a moment. But, Joe, at the moment, let's go to the telephone. And, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and where are you calling from?
This is Michelle from Quebec.
Yes, Michelle.
Yes, good evening, Joe. Good evening, Kevin.
Good evening.
Yeah, I got one question and maybe a comment. You both know of Red Elf, don't you?
I'm sorry, I did not understand. What's the name?
Red Elk. Red Elk, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that the lizard people came right after the devil got here. And they're into domination of the planet. They want the planet for themselves. Anyway, if it was anybody else, I wouldn't even mention it. But Red Elk is pretty cool old dude.
You know, Michelle, you've heard me do shows here where we talked about what's going on around South Mountain in Phoenix, right?
Yep.
And one of the things that is sort of a repeating theme in those petroglyphs is the lizard people.
Well, it seems that Red Elk says they've been around for a long, long time. They got here, he said, right after the Nephilim, well, you know. And they live underground, and they've got quite a few people. But what I want to ask Joe about is, you don't hear about much is the brown aliens, that when people are abducted, they find body parts. I thought if you might share a little bit of that with us.
Ah, see, somebody was paying attention the other night when I was talking. Oh, man. Actually, we do get reports of the brown aliens. You know, the best description I can give you of the brown aliens, if you've ever seen Travis Walton's Fire in the Sky, you remember those little aliens that were dragging him through the spaceship? They look a lot like that. They look a lot like that. And the ships themselves, they do say that they find body parts on them. Now, I've never heard anybody say they actually physically see them munching on them, but they do tell me that they see things like bite marks out of what appears to be human arms, human torso, human legs. They do look like kind of shrivelly old people. A lot of people call them the cleanup crew. I'm not sure why, but it seems to be an inside joke amongst contactees. They call them the cleanup crew. Has something to do with the Holocaust dreams. It's interesting stuff in itself. You probably do a whole show on that.
Yeah. That's a little gruesome.
It is. The reports are far and few between. It makes up less than 0.5% of abduction cases. It may not even make up that much, to be honest with you. Personally, I think, you know, we boast somewhere between 125, 150 of them, but It's something that's just odd, and there's no real reason for it. And what gets me is these people they put back, you know, and they seem to be one-time abductees. They don't seem to be multiple abductees. They seem to be picked up one time and they're put back. It's almost like they're being tagged for, you know, later use or something. I don't know.
Well, maybe they just didn't taste good.
Maybe so. Maybe they were high in cholesterol. That's why I tell them they leave me alone. You know, I'd be high in cholesterol, so... I don't know what it is. It is very weird stuff. As far as, you know, Red Elk, I've talked to Red Elk on a few occasions over the years. He comes into the support group on Pal Talk from time to time. And we definitely disagree on reptilians. Let me put it, one of ICAR's favorite things that I've been pushing in ufology for about 7 years, we agree to disagree. Personally, the evidence for us suggests that they're an amphibian race, probably 500 to 700 million years old, probably
came up either during the dinosaur era or right before it. But that's where they seem to be from. And as far as living underground, they live underwater. They may have some bases underground, but it seems like mostly they're underwater. And they do tend to like warmer places, but they're not scared of the cold. And they've been seen in places like Canada and Alaska and up in the States and, you know, United States. So they don't really seem to be scared of the cold. It doesn't like it's going to hurt them or anything, which pretty much rules out as far as being a real reptilian. Anybody who's ever seen a real reptilian knows if it's snowing outside, you're not going to see the reptilian moving.
Yeah.
You're
going
to just be sitting there. But
being hibernation, most likely.
Yeah, pretty much, just kind of not moving.
Michelle, did you have another question or comment?
One more question, if it's all right, Kevin.
Sure.
I just want to know, is still more men that report abductions than women?
Well, actually, it's more women that report abductions than men, but I know what you're talking about. This past year... Yeah, this past year in 2006, that's true. There does seem to have been, for at least for us, more men than women. Now, that's just an oddity, and I don't know. It's mainly because, you know, we're getting out into a lot of places these days, and maybe we're helping to make it more acceptable for men to come forward. But in general, there's still more female abductions than there are males. It just seems to be for this particular year in 2006, for our organization, it seems to be that we're more male abductees reporting their cases than female abductees. But all the years prior to that, it was always like a 70-30. This year, it was more like a 60-40, 60 male, 40 female. So I'm not exactly sure why. You know, I'd like to take credit for it myself, but I don't think that's what it is. For some reason, in this particular era or this particular year, men felt more relaxed and came forward. I really don't even know why. Maybe they were programmed to, but they just seem to be coming forward, and we're still getting a lot of guys coming forward. So I'm hoping that's a trend we stay. I'd like to see the numbers get a little closer together. Right now, we still estimate 65% female, 35% male overall. But if the male trend keeps up, that'll change.
Okay, Michelle, thank you for the call and very interesting questions. The telephone number is 1-800-289-1092. That's toll-free throughout North America, from the very tip-top of Canada all the way down to the tip of Florida. It's toll-free. Now, if you live outside of North America and you wish to communicate with us, here's what you do. You send us an email. The address is flash, F-L-A-S-H, at kevinsmithshow.com. In the subject line, be sure you put the word flash. The address is flash at kevinsmithshow.com, and the subject is flash. All right, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show, if you will. Tell us your first name and where are you calling from.
This is Trey in Atlanta.
Yes, Trey.
Yeah, Joe, thanks for coming on. I'm from Shreveport originally, so...
Cool.
It's funny, a lot of people don't know that people from in New Orleans call people from Shreveport Yankees.
Funny.
And you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Anyways, I wanted to use you being on this show to answer or maybe ask a couple questions that I never had anyone that I could actually ask these questions of.
Sure.
And first, I'd like to tell you a couple of things and then ask you if you've heard of any similar cases, since you've looked at so many cases. I found that once you were let on or let on to the phenomenon, and we realize they're real and they let us in on it, kind of, and we're not as freaked out about it, they let you keep more memories.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to worry about, you know, erasing as many. And I want to tell you a couple of things. And they've granted a request. And when I say granted a request, I don't mean for money or gold or lottery tickets. I mean for, you know, things that... I asked them the sensations, different sensations. The sensation of being sucked up through the ceiling or being pulled up through the air or the feeling of floating in the room. And there's been several times where that was granted. And sometimes it would take 4 months. And I would ask them, and sometimes it would be the next night. A couple of them was being shot down from the sky on some kind of railing system. And kind of like I was being shot back into my bed and my body. Have you had any other people say any examples like this, to where they requested something similar or experience, and were able to actually it turned out to where they responded? And I know this is probably going to be after the initial communion, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So Do you know any cases?
Yeah, well, actually, that's not that uncommon. Once a contactee reaches a certain part of awakening, and we do call it at first we call it coming out of the closet. That's what we call it, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. I know a lot of people laugh at us, but it's the same thing. It's coming out of the closet. The first time you talk about this publicly, this is like the first time an alcoholic goes to an AA meeting or the first time a gay person says he's gay. It's the same sensation. So we call it coming out of the closet. And then there are stages of awakening. And what we mean by that is the first stage is simply realizing something's going on that doesn't fit in everyday life. And then from that point, it progresses. Well, when you get up to around stage 15, you're actually coherently aware of your contact on a much different level. A lot of times you're retaining memories. You're not as threat really anymore. You've become a little bit more passive in the way that you deal with them and the way you let them deal with you. So by doing so, they're more willing to let you have information, and they do grant requests. It's not uncommon for a contactee to ask for a particular sensation or to understand how a particular thing works. It's quite a common thing. And they seem to be accommodating. And the reason sometimes it's a day and sometimes it's 4 or 5 months is that's you. That's not them. When you reach a point when they scan you or whatever they're doing, when they're in your head, when they go through your head and they realize this is not going to shock you or horrify you or scare you or make you go blab your mouth, they'll let you do it. And that seems to be quite common. And it's one of the ways that we get information from contactees. When we get a contactee around stage 15 or 16, what we do is we have them start programming themselves subconsciously to ask questions telepathically. Like, why are they here? What are you doing? What is this for? And when you get 7,000 contactees doing this on a regular basis, a lot of time we get what you call leakage information. The grays may answer you without even realizing they've done it. Because, you know, they're scanning your head, doing whatever. You're projecting this into their head. Sometimes they just answer you. And sometimes, from what I heard, they even get a little mad about it when they realize that they've done it. So be careful with this, because I have heard there is repercussions on a couple occasions about this. But still, it works. So, you know, we help contactees understand this, and contactees start accumulating information for themselves and for us, which is nice. And they do request things like, you know, can I remember being in the ship when it was in space, or can I remember seeing myself being taken from my room? Things like that are requested or granted. Because at this point, you no longer have that fear of seeing that portal open over your bed and that light grab you and bring you up through the ceiling and take you away. You kind of lose that fear. It's still an awe-inspiring, rushing experience, but it's a fearless one. It's kind of like a roller coaster ride. It's basically the same thing at this point, because it's a rush in the fact that it's you can experience and you remember it and experience it. But the fear itself, or the majority of the fear itself, has been removed by yourself. And at that point, they seem to be much more willing to work with contactees and be much more open about what they're doing here and what they don't. But I'm going to tell you the truth. I do not think extraterrestrials are above lying. I don't.
So why is that?
Well, first off, there's some things that I've always kind of wondered about when it comes to the contact. You know, like the caller was talking about the lizard people taking over planet Earth. Well, 6,000 years ago, there was no technology on this planet. So if they were here, they could have easily taken over the planet. Easily. It wouldn't even been a big fight. So that pretty much rules out that either one of these three species are here to outright conquer us. And if they wanted to help us, let's be honest, 6,000 years ago, they could have started introducing a new way of life and a new form of technology. By today's society, we would be 5,000 years more advanced than what we are. But we're not. So that mm-hmm. tells you that they're not really here to help us. So when you understand these two things, then the next question is, well, why are they here? What are they doing? Well,
yeah, if they're not here to take over and they're not here to help, then what's up?
Yeah, what's up? That's the thing. Well, they appear to have their own agenda, and humans seem to be not even the whole part of the agenda, just part of the agenda. From what we can tell now, humans seem to be part of the agenda and not the whole agenda. We just seem to be one part of a very big puzzle. And that's another reason we do all this contact research. Each contactee is a piece of the puzzle. The more pieces of the puzzle we get, the clearer the picture gets. Right now, I'd say some people say we have 50%. I'd say we got like 35%. It's arguable at best, because once you start talking about agendas, you're sheer speculation. I mean, you can say that this many contactees told you about this agenda, but it is still sheer speculation. because you can't get ET to confirm it. I mean, you can't get him to come to your house and say, yeah, this is what we're going to do. So it's still speculation, but at least it gives you an idea of what directions we're heading in. You ever notice, first off, everybody always talks about contactees being much higher in the United States than anywhere else on the planet. Well, if that was true, why would that be true? Mainly because the United States has the most immigrants of anyone on the planet. And by knowing that, this is telling you...
Well, I see what you're saying. They're coming from everywhere in the world.
Yeah, see, like 300 years ago when the United States was being formed, there was a lot of persecuted people. Well, if these people were contactees and were having to deal with this, of course, you know, they thought it was demonic or something, but they would have been fleeing to the United States by the droves, which in turn would have made a much larger group of star children in this country, probably 30, 35, maybe even 40%. The U.S. government's already proved that there's a 12%, this group of children, 12% of the children in the United States seem to possess an almost unrealistic ability to multitask, and they seem to be unlimited in how fast they can learn. And the government can't explain this group of children. But when we've interviewed a lot of these children, it turns out their parents are contactees, which means they're star children. They should be brighter, faster, and more multiple tasks. There seems to start just starting to be a gap now.
Mm-hmm.
When you do a real contactee, when you give a real contactee an IQ test, the lowest one I've seen scored so far is 130. That's the lowest. And a lot of these people are not holding big-time jobs or big-time careers. Some of them are. We have doctors, lawyers, politicians, engineers. Pretty much every gamut of the spectrum is represented by a contactee. But a lot of these people are quite brilliant, quite bright, quite fast, but they're just leading ordinary lives. But one of the things I've noticed is the ones that start to deal with the awakenings even start to learn to use, like, their empathic abilities, their telepathic abilities. They start using them to their advantage. That's another thing we teach in the organization. If you have these abilities, you should learn to use them to your advantage. Being a telepathic or being empathic is a significant advantage in a business deal. Trust me on this.
I would think so. Let's go back to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, please, and where are you calling from?
This is Brent from Wyoming.
Yes, Brent.
I said this once several weeks ago, and I'll say it again. Man is very arrogant. Look at the dog. How many different species are there? Who's to say there aren't just as many species of quote-unquote man as there are dogs?
Okay.
That's my comment.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Goodbye.
Okay. It's like, whoa, I kind of missed that there for a second. I wasn't sure where I kind of missed the last part of that or something.
I think what he's saying is that perhaps these alleged aliens are really as human as we are.
Actually, you know, I wouldn't exactly rule that out in the fact that as far as, you know, their internal organs are probably different than ours, but when you listen to contactees talk about these guys, they do have a religion. It seems to only be one religion, but they do seem to have one. They seem to have their, and a lot of contactees tell you a lot of times they'll see their children with them. So in a lot of ways, their society is a lot like ours. Technologically, yes, more advanced. Spiritually, maybe even more advanced. But still, they still slip on one little leather thingy at a time, you know?
That's true.
And they are bipedal. They tend to be built quite a lot like us. Some people seem to think that they could be like descendants of the dolphins or the dolphins' ancestors, you know, where the dolphins came from, because they are amphibious. And anybody knows anything about a dolphin knows a dolphin, on average, is about 6.5 feet long, about 350 pounds. They are one of the few animals that have a straight spine. And in their fins, there are five little bones that look like fingers and toes on all four of their fins. So the thing about it is, I mean, on their two front and their back flippers, so they look like they walked upright at one time on planet Earth. And they do possess more senses than us and a bigger brain than we do. So,
and they can be taught to communicate, and humans can be taught to communicate with dolphins.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, please, and where are you calling from?
This is Bill in Milwaukee.
Yes, Bill.
And I'm a first-time caller.
Oh, well, now, first-time caller, let me give you some applause here. We're delighted to have you with us.
Two comments and a question for Joe. First of all, does he know that the ICAR website, if you download shows that were passed, that he's got like 8 of the same shows or more?
I don't know.
Mm-hmm. There shouldn't be no shows on the ICAR website, but okay, we'll check that out.
Well, at one time, or not not ICAR, but on Wake Up.
So oh, okay. Let me, right quick, and then I'll let you finish. The producer of Wake Up's in control of that, and see, I left Wake Up. I host UFO Undercover now.
Okay.
And actually, that's one of the reasons we kind of parted ways was because of the archives. But I'll tell you what, if you go to www.paranormalradionetwork.com, .org, I have all of the last 50 shows I did with him, and all the shows I've done on the other stuff since then are all posted there, and you can download them from there.
Okay, I listened to a bunch of those today. Mm-hmm. Second of all, you ran a T-shirt contest a while back. Gia told me about it, and I sent some a T-shirt thing in there, mm-hmm. and you used it on Cafe Press,
mm-hmm.
but I never got anything, even an acknowledgement that I
really?
Won. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. You got my email?
No.
Use this one, okay, because this is the only way you're going to get to me right now. icar1@cox.net. Don't use the icar@cox.net because the mail, we're just getting too much mail in, and it would take me 4 days to find your mail. So
icar1@cox.net.
Yeah, send it to me right there, and send me which design it was, and I'll make sure you get a T-shirt within 2 weeks.
Okay. Third is a question. Have you got any kind of a history on any of these life forms?
Now, what do you mean by history?
I
mean,
a history from their point of view.
Actually,
you know, what's happened, you know, with them along, you know, they've had wars with this particular group of individuals, or, you know.
Well,
in a sense, with the Greys or the Reptilians, or the Amphibians, or the Mantis, or the Nordics. Do you have histories on any of these?
Well, we have some history on them now. Now, when we start talking about histories on different aliens, I'll give you some things. One of the things we found interesting is that the Reptilians seem to possess genetic memory. Their memories are handed from child, you know, from parent to child to parent to child, and so on and so forth. Well, what we found out is that, or what we think, okay? We think about 6,000 years ago, there was a human-like species on the planet. Not us, but a species real close to us living on the planet. The ones the Sumerians talk about, the ones that used to plow the fields and drink the beer, and procreate, but they really didn't do things like ask why, and they didn't really understand why they had to plow the fields. They didn't understand about the stars. They were just kind of there as cheap labor, I guess is the best way they can say it. Well, the Sumerians talk about this reptilian race that came in, used to steal their women at night and rape them, and their children is what created the species that's here on this planet today. We're supposed to be a hybrid species. We're supposed to be part of the human race and part of the reptilian race, and those two merged and created the species that's here on this planet. Now, it's not just the Sumerians that say this. The Dogon say this. The Aborigines actually talk about this, too. The Egyptians do. And so does the Christian Bible when it's talking about Adam and Eve. Remember, Adam and Eve could only do things like they could name the animals and the trees, but they really didn't understand how anything worked. And, you know, they ran around naked in the world, and all of a sudden the reptile handed Eve the apple. She bit into it, and she became self-aware. And that's what they say the reptilians gave the human race, is self-awareness.
Joe, we have to take a break, and we'll continue with that when we come back. Bill from Milwaukee, thanks for the call. What a great question. All right, folks, we'll be back with more of The Kevin Smith Show and Joe Montaldo in just a moment. back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is Joe Montaldo. The telephone number, toll-free throughout North America, is 1-800-289-1092. And let me give it to you again, 1-800-289-1092. If you forget it, go over to kevinsmithshow.com, scroll down, and right under the little blurb about tonight's show, where you see Joe's picture, right under the little paragraph is the phone number. If you're outside of North America, you can send us a flash message. We monitor that email all through the show. It's the only one that we do monitor, and only those that come in from outside of North America make it to the air, okay? Joe, we have had a number of calls this evening, and we still have telephone lines lighting up, so let's go to the telephone and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
Hi, Kevin. It's Debbie from Columbus.
Yes.
I'm glad you have Joe on again tonight. Hi, Joe. I wanted to sort of ask a question but make a comment, too. My friend Deb and I were down in New Orleans last October for the Vampire Ball.
Oh,
and
cool.
We stayed in the Empress Hotel, which is on the backside of Via Carre I can't remember the street now. Anyway, I was just kind of curious, were any of the reptilians seen in the backside of the French Quarter, to your knowledge?
That's where they were seen, on Elysian Fields, on the backside of the French Quarter. That's exactly where they were seen.
We weren't that far from there.
Yeah, actually, you were very close. You were within two blocks of where they were sighted.
Okay, yeah, we were staying on Ursulines Ave.
Yeah, you could have walked there in less than 5 minutes. If you'd have walked out from there and took a right and kept going down, you'd have been there in about 5 minutes. You'd have been standing right where they were standing. So they wasn't very far from you. What's interesting about it is where the location was. I mean, they couldn't have picked. The only place they could have found older than this in the United States is if they would have went to Florida.
Mm-hmm.
It was just an interesting place for them to be. And for Louisiana, it's also where a couple of things, some key things were signed in the city. There's even a historical plaque there. It was just an interesting place to see. They could have showed up anywhere. I mean, let's be honest, New Orleans East and Gentilly and St. Bernard were under 8 foot of water. So they could have been anywhere. It was just curious they picked that spot. I don't know why, but it was curious.
How many other folks have you talked to beside the policemen and the National Guardsmen who've seen the reptilians? Have you talked to any other folks?
In New Orleans?
Yes.
There's only two other accounts I've got. I've got one. A gentleman had contacted Linda Moulton Howe, and he had heard me speak on Coast, and then he sent me an email, and I got his, and another gentleman just recently sent me an email also talking about it. And basically, the gentleman that heard me, the one I'm talking about with Linda, this actually happened before Katrina. He had seen him. The other guy had heard us. He had said he had seen a reptilian while he was, he said he thinks he saw a reptilian while he was taking his boat up Elysian Fields. This was 2 days after the storm. He was actually working rescue down. He was just a citizen. But he couldn't really give us any kind of accurate description other than they were kind of greenish, yellowish, and seemed to be about 6.5 foot tall, but they were moving fast through the water. And he was cruising the direction. He said he had no interest to go back and look. So that's the best that we got out of him.
Well, I think it would only make sense that the sightings of reptilians would be there because New Orleans is considered the most haunted city in the United States.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah, it is. I was telling Kevin on an earlier show my experience in the Empress Hotel where there was a ghost there.
Yeah, well, next time you come down for Halloween, come down the night before Halloween, go to the dungeon, ask for Greg, and ask to go to the private party in the back. They'll let you in if you know how to do that. Oh, God, I just told half the planet, but anyway.
There goes that party.
that was not a good secret. Oh, well.
Okay. Deb, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. And, folks, you have time to call as well. Now, I'll tell you what happens, and you probably have this happen too, Joe. We have folks that hang on till the last 2 minutes and then call.
Mm-hmm.
And then don't understand why we don't take the call.
Oh, yeah.
There's not time to take the call and then answer whatever they say. And so if you want to call, it's 1-800-289-1092, toll free. Now, one of the things that you have talked about a lot is the Betty and Barney Hill case, and you have a new theory on it. Now, I want to get into that right after this telephone call.
Okay.
Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and where are you calling from?
This is Victoria Rose from Illinois.
Hello, Victoria Rose. Have you ever called in before?
No, I'm a first-time caller.
Well, some applause for you here. Okay, Victoria, what's on your mind this evening?
I wanted to ask Joe how come it seems that there are more contact with grays than there are reptilians. It just seems to be spread out and doesn't seem to happen so much.
Actually, that's a good question, actually. With the grays, the human and the reptilian aliens seem to have about the same amount of abduction cases. If we take our 7,000 cases, we would say probably 3,000, 3,500 or between those two. The rest of them all are exclusive grays, about 4,000 are grays. And the reason we think why is we think the grays are the ones that are doing the most genetic work, the most of the experiments, and they seem to be monitoring both the reptilians and the human race. People always tell me, oh, the grays work for the human, the grays work for the reptilians. I don't think so, guys. I think that might be the other way around. The grays seem to be much more advanced than either one of the other two races, much more advanced. And the grays, from what I'm told, work for the light beings, who seem to be more advanced than anybody who's visiting the planet. So I'm thinking that's why. I mean, it just seems like the grays have a more vested interest in what's happening to this group of people. So it's like they're abducting their people, and then they're also abducting some reptilian abductees and some human abductees as well. So it seems like that's why we have more cases.
Does it seem to be that the grays and the reptilians are collaborating together?
Well, I don't know if they're collaborating. I would say more along the lines that the reptilians are working along the grays' guidelines. The grays seem to be the ones pulling the strings here, and I've noticed from a lot of contactees, they'll tell you they'll see like a gray and a reptilian. The reptilian always gives way to the gray, just like those big humans always give way to the gray. It's almost like they're scared of them. So it's more like that the grays are imposing their will at least over part of the reptilian and the human agendas, which I do think are separate and on their own as well. But I do think the grays have some say in what goes on with both species.
All right. Thanks, Joe. All right,
thank you for the call.
Actually, I recognize that voice. I knew I recognized that voice.
All right. Let's talk about Betty and Barney Hill. And by the way, folks, even though we are moving on to another topic, doesn't mean that you can't call in. We'll still accept your calls no matter what your questions happen to be. 1-800-289-1092. Joe, you have a different theory about Betty and Barney Hill and their UFO experience. Share that with us.
Well, this all started a couple of years ago. I was talking with my Southwest Regional Director, Dee Andrews. And by the way, we still disagree on this, and I'm sure while she's listening tonight, she's going to kick something. But one of the things that, like I said earlier tonight, even in our organization, we do agree to disagree sometimes. But for me, when I started looking at Betty's case, and we're not even going to talk about Barney, but when I started looking at Betty's case, I noticed that Betty's case seems to be different than every other abductee I've ever investigated. And that started bothering me. I'm like, well, if she's really an abductee by any of the five species that we investigate, then she should fall somewhere into these guidelines, but she didn't. So I said, you know what, I'm going to go back and review the case again. And this is like the fifth time I've reviewed this case. So I go back, I'm sitting there reading, you know, I'm reading about the needle, so I'm thinking, oh, epidural. You know, they gave her an epidural. And or an amniocentesis, depending on which way you want to look at it, but the thing about it is this was a physical needle that was put in through the navel. This is classic. We use this every day in every hospital all over this country today. Now, in the 62, we didn't. This would have been probably a black ops technology, but in today's society, we use it every day. But it doesn't appear to be alien. Also, she said she was drugged. She is the first contactee that I have ever heard say they were physically drugged by an extraterrestrial. All the other contactees say that they do this thing with their mind, and it's better than drugs. It seems to you just kind of go numb. I don't even know how to explain it. But they don't use drugs. Also, she walked up a set of stairs to get into the spacecraft. In 25 years of investigation, I've never had anybody tell me they walked up a set of stairs to get into a spacecraft. They said they've seen ramps, they've been near ships, but 99 and 9/10 of all cases, they're not taken that way. So these things started bugging me. So, you know, I'd remember hearing the regression tapes, and the regression tapes can only be at best considered leading because the person who's doing the regressions was leading the witnesses. They were using words like extraterrestrial and UFOs and spacecraft. You can't do that in a regression. It's just a big no-no. So the more I looked into this case, the more anomalies I kept finding, and I kept thinking to myself, well, Joe, this is totally different. It's got to be some new species of alien, something we haven't encountered other than Betty and Barney Hill. So then I decided to add Barney into the mix. Barney's a black male. Betty's a white male. We're talking 1962. These two people elected to go public with this, okay? Now, anybody who's, you know, 30, 40 years or older that was alive, well, I'm sorry, 40 or 50 years older and was living in 1962 will understand what I'm talking about. For a black and white man to have gone public.
Well, a black man and white female.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I got that backwards in there. I apologize. But for them to have gone public in 1962, it was at best a death threat. I mean, that was the best thing they could have hoped for. I mean, they were still blowing up buses, running people over, burning crosses. This was not the time to go public with this. So the thing that bothered me is there was no flack. I could not find an article anywhere that condemned Betty and Barney Hill or anyone's side comments or anything that said anything about Betty and Barney Hill being a black and white couple, only an abductee couple. The government abducted Betty and Barney Hill. This was a military classic MILAB abduction. It fits all of the MILAB criteria and none of the alien abduction criteria.
Well, what about the star map?
Well, there's two things about the star map I found interesting. One, there's an identical map that the Dogon have. Betty and Barney Hill's map was not a unique map. Most people hate when I say this, but the Dogon did have the map prior to Betty and Barney Hill having it. Now, George Norrie asked me, he said, well, you know, that just says that, that just proves it. I said, no. He goes, well, Betty didn't know about it. I said, no, Betty probably didn't, but don't think Uncle Sam didn't know about it. The Dogon been around for a while. Don't think we haven't investigated that and got every piece of information we could from them. So the thing about it is it looks like a classic setup. They were using what we would consider narcotics. They were using physical technologies. There were even human-like people present. By her own admittance, she couldn't tell if they were quite human or not, but they looked human. This sounds like a classic military abduction with maybe a gray or a human, like hybrid, watching the procedures, but it doesn't sound like an alien abduction. There's just, even like they, when they talk about the tables and the instruments used, these are handheld, like stainless steel instruments you would find in any hospital in the United States in today's society. But it's not what the aliens use. And even descriptions of abductions prior to Betty and Barney Hill do not describe abductions that way. So, you know, even if you go back as far as Ezekiel and the wheel, this was a physical abduction taken by a light. And this was 2,000 years before Betty and Barney Hill. So the thing of it is they're the oddball case. Now, I hate to rule out an alien abduction just on a, you know, just that it's an oddball case, but this particular abduction in Betty and Barney Hill's life was a MILAB abduction. If you understand what a military abduction is and what a MILAB is, and you've done your research on how, because in today's society, in 2007, a MILAB case, one of the first things they do is give them an amniocentesis. They also use drugs to control them, and they use drugs to adjust their brains. This is not an alien technology. This is a human technology. So if you take what Betty and Barney Hill told us in 62 and lay it over what the MILABs tell us in 2005, 2006, and 2007, you have a matching case. If you take what she said and put it against what the abductees say about alien abductions, it doesn't match. So for me, I have to move the case from an alien abduction to a military abduction. As a researcher, that's the only way I can do it. Because now the evidence, when you really review the evidence, suggests that this case is out of the norm. It's not a typical abduction in any shape, form, or fashion. It's using a much more terrestrial-based technology than any abduction before or since. So why would she be the exception to the rule? It's highly unlikely that she was.
All right, we have to take a break. Caller, if you'll just hang on, we'll get to you as soon as the break is over, and we'll be back more with Joe Montaldo. And I know he just rocked your boat for a lot of folks who are into the Betty and Barney Hill case. And we'll give you the opportunity to call in as well. We'll be right back. We're back. My guest is Joe Montaldo, the National Director of ICAR. And, Joe, we have a caller on the line. So, caller, if you will, tell us your first name and where are you calling from?
Hi, Kevin. This is Dave. I'm calling from North Carolina.
Yes, Dave.
Hey, Joe, I wanted to ask you, I was listening earlier about when you were talking about the reptilians and that experience down in New Orleans. And is it really easy to detect when you run into a group of people like that or a person who is a reptilian? I mean, do they look almost like us, but there's something that's slightly different, or is it, like, pretty dramatically different?
No, it's when you see them, you know you saw them. I mean, their basic build is humanoid, but they don't look human. I mean, they got eyes and nose and basic ears. I mean, they look like a human that someone took a alien reptilian suit and pulled it over the top of them. So, no, when you see them, there's no doubt what you
okay,
saw.
Okay, so it's not, you would not be...
Yeah, it's not like not the like tall whites where you kind of be going, is that just some sickly human or no, it's very distinctive. There's no doubt what you saw when you see them.
So they were just doing reconnaissance work down there?
I don't even think they were doing, you know what I honestly think? I think they were taking a stroll down Elysian Fields. Probably out stretching their toes in the mud and the slime and the water and the snakes and everything else.
Because
probably
they
felt
could,
right at home
they
down
could,
there.
Basically.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's what I really think this was about. I think that there was an opportunity for them to be a tourist without having, you know, to disguise themselves or any other thing, and I think they took advantage of it.
Yeah.
But, like, I could be wrong, too.
Okay. Because I was just wondering, I didn't know if perhaps, you know, if they've infiltrated our workspace or anything like that, if I would be able to tell somebody who is a reptilian. But from what you're saying, it sounds to me like it would be like, whoa.
Yeah.
You're not right.
Oh, no, you'd know them. You'd be kind of like, okay, I'm leaving this place immediately.
Okay. All right, well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Dave, thanks for the call. 1-800-289-1092 is the telephone number. We have time for one more call. But if that one call comes in the last 2 minutes, you will have missed your opportunity, all right? 1-800-289-1092. And, Joe, you know, with both the story about the reptilians, I should call it the report, not the story, but the report about the reptilians, and then with your theory on the Betty and Barney Hill case, you've rocked a lot of boats here tonight.
Yeah, and we've been doing it. By the way, let me say this about Betty and Barney Hill, too. I don't want anybody to think I think that Betty and Barney Hill was lying. I do not think that. I think Betty and Barney Hill legitimately thinks what happened to them is what happened to them. What I'm saying is the investigation initially done on this case was lacking information. The person, they did the best job they could at the time, but they do, to be honest with y'all, they simply don't have the volume of information that we have today. And there's no way they could go back and do a comparison study like I have. So I'm not faulting the researchers. It's just, as a ufologist, I have to be honest to myself and honest to the public. If I see a case that I don't think is legitimate or I don't think is right, I'm going to say something, because if I don't, I'm not doing my job. And I know a lot of people, it's not a popular theory about Betty and Barney Hill, and I know a lot of people get upset about it, but if you go strictly by the evidence, and that's all that's important, it's not an alien abduction. It's not to say that Betty and Barney Hill didn't have abductions before or after. Matter of fact, I talked with Ann Refuse not too long ago, and the descriptions of what Betty says about contact later in her life sounds more like an abduction. And it's not out of a place. I mean, a military abduction, by the way, always involves a contactee. Okay? They don't abduct non-contactees. They only abductees and contactees. So it's telling you that Betty and Barney Hill had prior alien contact. It's just this case, the one they're famous for, is not an alien abduction. Everything about that case stinks. It was planted from day one, and it sounds just typically like something our government would do. Sorry. Didn't mean to go on a rant, Kevin.
Yeah, well, I'm sitting here collecting my thoughts about what I know, actually what I've heard about military abductions. And what is the purpose of them?
Well, most of them are for backwards engineering, and what we mean by that is they're taking a contactee and trying to access their memories. They're trying to get details of ships, details of things that go on ships, details of procedures, any details that they can of the aliens' lives, alien ships, aliens' technology. They're using the contactees, just like the rest of us, to get information from the aliens. That's what
so it's
doing.
An information collection process.
And they even try to reprogram some of them, because we've run into a few that have been kind of messed up and needed some serious counseling. They've even run and tried to reprogram some of them to work for them while they were being abducted to try to gather, you know, because they found out when I started making it public about what we were doing to obtain information by programming humans, having the contactees program themselves for this, it seems like somebody else picked up on the idea. And it seems like that's what they were doing, because for a while there, we were getting really messed up contactees. They were getting abducted by both. The government seemed to be trying to get them to do things, or even to, like, try to physically take something from the craft. You're just not going to do that. ET's not going to tolerate that, not even a little bit. So, and there are repercussions for that. When I look at the aliens, I kind of look at them like, kind of like your step-parents. What they're doing, they consider they're doing in for us and for them. You know, for, it's kind of a joint thing, but they aren't going to let you get out of line. And when you do, they're going to backsmack you, and they're going to reward you when you do right. And if you heard Jim Sparks talk about it, he's telling you the same thing. Basically, what they do is it's kind of like if you get out of line, then you get backslapped, and usually it's not a pleasant thing. You're doing what they want. You're helping along. Yeah, they're willing to share information. They're even willing to help you out. I mean, you know, there's been people who've had stage 4 cancer that all of a sudden had a contact and were healed the next. Even the doctors were going, what in the? We had 2 cases like that in California. We've got over 20 cases of people being terminal that all of a sudden weren't. And they said they had contact prior to it. But then we've also got people, by the way, that have been perfectly healthy, had contact, and ended up with cancer. So, I don't know. Y'all can guess on that one what's going on, but it is something we find, and it is weird. It's a very strange thing.
We just have about 3 minutes left, and I want to ask you a question that comes up frequently on this show. A lot of people have watched shows, for instance, like The X-Files, and in particular The X-Files, and they think that The X-Files is in good measure sort of a disclosure being leaked out under the umbrella of entertainment. Now, as an actual investigator of abductees, what do you think about that? Is it pretty accurate, or is it just entertainment?
Well, no, it's not. What this is being a way of giving out information. People always tell me we need disclosure. Let me say this, and I've said this more than once. This is disclosure, ladies and gentlemen. This is what we're doing. The government wants us to disclose this, or they would shut people like me up. They wouldn't let someone who can present this convincingly to speak as much as I do if they didn't want this out there. The thing about it is, and I have been threatened on at least 2 occasions about speaking about the alien agenda, and told I can talk about whatever I want as long as it's research-based and it doesn't deal with the alien agenda. And they don't mind. They want this information being put out to the public. We are the disclosure. The idea is for people like myself and Kevin Smith and George Norrie and every UFO investigator out there and every radio show host is to educate the population to get enough people understanding that this is a real phenomenon, and then you can approach the government for disclosure. Because if 250 million Americans say, what the hell, then yes, we're going to get disclosure. But if 2 million Americans say it, they're going to go, sure, whatever, you're not even a voting bloc. And that's the way the real world works, and that's where we are right now. So the media is a good tool for disclosure. It allows people like myself and others to get up here, tell you what we've learned, what we know. It allows you to go out and do your own homework, check out what we're saying, prove this to yourself. This is not a belief system. ET is not God. ET is not a belief. You have to understand that this is a real phenomenon. And the only way you're going to do this is either to be a contactee and know it's real, or to have accumulated enough realistic information to prove this is real beyond a shadow of a doubt. But it's not a belief. You can't believe E.T. is real. That's like saying you believe God is real.
Okay, Joe Montaldo, and thank you for being with us this evening. If you will, just hang on for a minute. I want to talk with you right after the show. Ladies and gentlemen, Joe Montaldo, and I want to thank all of you who called in and asked your questions and made your comments. You made the evening right along with Joe. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. I'll be back on Monday. You be here, too, okay? Until then, have a great weekend. So long, everybody.